Thank you so much. Thank you very, very much for doing that reading and for stepping up to the plate and taking the shepherd, being the shepherd for tonight. I'm going to start at the top. This is day 69. I'm on page 209. And again, my name is Pat. And I am a grateful believer in the Lord Jesus Christ. And also, I am grateful to be abstinent. The Lord has allowed me to be abstinent since August 16th, 1987. And I give him the glory and the praise for that. I'm going to read that verse at the top. It says, if your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. These words were spoken by Jesus to his crowd, the crowd that's listening to him, giving them instruction about holiness. You know, how do we walk the good walk? What do we do? And there are many things that can cause me to get off track. And when they have gotten to the point that I continually get off track because of them, then it's important for me to just throw them out completely. I think of how it was in the Old Testament. There were times in the Old Testament where the Lord, they came to a place and the place was really close to them and the people were really horrific. They were really bad. Then the Israelites were instructed that they had to, what they call devoted to the Lord, they had to actually annihilate the whole region, everybody in the region. They were told to do that for the sake that they knew that if the people remained, then they would cause the Israelites to go off straight, you know, to go in the wrong place. And so I realize that there are times that the Lord also calls me to what the Bible calls devote to destruction. Certain things that can really get me off track. And I learned it a lot, actually, in my abstinence. As it was said in the reading, it says, because of my overeating, I had to eventually had to weigh and measure my food. And to an outsider, that looks very, very drastic. You know, why would somebody have to weigh and measure every little bite that they put into their mouth, you know? And why also do I only, you know, eat three times a day, or, you know, this is my particular way that I abstain. You know, why do I do all of those things? Well, I do those things because I know my history. And I also know the pattern of the sin in my life. The pattern is that once I open the door ever so slightly, then the evil one is just waiting for that little crack in the door and just would like to just take the door off the hinges with the force of, you know, pushing it in and just destroying me. And so it says, again, if your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And then he goes on to say, if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. And when I was thinking about that, I was thinking also how I have to fine-tune things as I go along. As I grow in my spiritual life, actually, I become more sensitive to sin and those things that will cause me to sin. And I don't even allow my eyes to even look at it, you know. I know that was definitely true, too, at the beginning of my recovery. And I still don't watch a lot of TV. And I don't read a lot of magazines because they were a lot like what I used to do when I was into my disease. I used to watch TV and then long over whatever I saw, whether it was food that they showed on the TV or lifestyles, you know, that went against what I am going for now, the lifestyle that they portray, you know, and put before me. It's not the godliness that God is calling me for. It's usually they really put up the importance of material things, where the Lord is telling me that what is important is not what is seen, but what is unseen. And so, and I also had to do some fine-tuning even in my own abstinence. There are certain foods that the group that actually has taught me how to abstain physically, they would allow me to have, but I choose not to have those today. Because of, it's like it says in the bottom, at that bottom where it talks about the verse from Hebrews, it says, we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. Let us throw off everything that hinders. And so some of the things that I have chosen to let go of, I let go because I realize that they are hindering me from going as fast as I could. It would be as if I was a racer, you know, that I raced and I was already automatically quick. But if I chose to keep wearing heavy clothes or even put weights on my ankles, regardless of how quick I am, I will actually slow myself down by doing those things. And the same is true in the spiritual life, that there are certain activities, certain thoughts, and for me being a compulsive overeater, there are certain foods that are just too much for me. They're too much actually emotionally for me, even more so than physically, that I tend to put greater weight on their value. And I am coming to understand that I need to learn to delight myself in the Lord. He should be my delight. And the other things, you know, I enjoy them, but I don't want to lust after them or to be obsessed about them, because that's part of my compulsive overeating too, is that I have not only have a history of compulsively overeating, but I also have a history of being obsessive about the food, always thinking about food, and therefore not able to go on with my life. In the reading, it talked about the binging, where I would open something up by myself and then eventually eat the whole thing. And I have come to call them elongated binges, because they are sneaky. I didn't know that, you know, I could easily deny that I even binge when I used to overeat in that way. And from time to time, I meet people who are, I don't know, I can't pronounce that they are compulsive overeaters, but they do, some of them have the physical manifestation that something is not quite right in terms of, you know, input and outsourcing what it is. And so they'll say to me, I don't have a trouble with overeating. I don't overeat, you know. And I remember being there myself, you know. I can remember being very outraged when someone compared me to an alcoholic and was like, excuse me, you know, I'm not an alcoholic, you know. And, you know, and of course, you know, I certainly, in terms of the food and running after the food and thinking about the food all the time and on and on and on, yes, I was, you know. I was definitely an alcoholic with the food, and yet I had this denial. And that's the thing about denial. Someone recently, they used that acronym, denial, D-E-N-I-A-L, don't even notice I am lying, it says. And that is the thing about compulsive overeating, is that I can be in denial because I have many people who actually help me in that denial. I live in a world where overeating actually is becoming the drug of choice. If you look, you know, every once in a while I do watch TV, and I notice that they have a great preponderance of food programs now. You know, people who go across the country looking for places to eat and talk about it, you know, and or people who, you know, take recipes and they make, you know, concoctions or whatever. They even have contests with food now, you know, on TV. And so this whole, you know, adoration of food is not, you know, it's becoming, like I said, the drug of choice, you know, for the masses. And so to overeat, I can be aided and abetted by overeating, you know, and I could think that my problem with exercise, you know, I see that happening too, you know, where people who think that the problem is not their overeating, their problem is that they don't exercise enough, you know. And my experience has been, if I don't take care of what I'm putting in my body, I can exercise, you know, 24/7, you know, and still be quite overweight. So I have to deal with that issue of what am I eating, you know, what am I putting inside of my body. And so I need to be in groups of people who keep that in my consciousness so I can remember that, because again, I could easily go back into that. I don't want to do that. And I am grateful for people who actually taught me how to abstain. I really am grateful for that. I'm grateful for the Lord bringing me to a place where I could actually accept what they told me. I had actually heard of this way to abstain long before I actually did it. But I had to go out and do some more experimenting on my own. And once I eventually hit bottom really good, when the food really got to me, I became very willing to do what needs to be done. And today, I am so grateful. I am really, really grateful, because the thing about abstinence that I find is that it makes my food enjoyable, because it takes away that guilt, you know, that I'm able to eat guilt-free, because I'm staying within, one of my sponsors used to call it a playpen. You know, she says, you know, you're in a playpen, it's fine, you know. Like you put a baby in a playpen, you know, there's only so many toys they can have in that playpen. And they are, you know, they have a good old time. They want to throw them around and whatever, that's fine. You know, it's the same sort of thing. I'm very grateful, you know, for my abstinence and being able to have my meals and eat it and they're over, you know, and I can have my life afterwards. But like that second paragraph, for me personally, I was one who had trouble with amounts, and so my abstinence did have to, and does include, that I have to weigh and measure my food, because greed is one of my character defects. I'm very greedy. And gluttony, I guess, also, you know, with that too, I can get very gluttonous if left to my own device. So I'm grateful for that tool of weighing and measuring. And the third paragraph where it talks about well-meaning people, even now, especially now, I would say, after having done this for 22 years, people, I still have people, you know, who come to me who say, oh, Pat, you know, I know you don't need this, you know, or, you know, can't you just blah, 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 you know, whatever. And I can just not get angry. I used to get angry at the beginning because I would think they were trying to sabotage me, or I would think at least they could understand. Don't they remember how I was? But no, they don't. I couldn't always remember how I was. So they're not in charge of my abstinence, but I am. And I'm grateful, again, that I know what I need to do. And I'm grateful for God who gives me the strength to do it. And I'm noticing, too, and I said this at the morning meeting, that there are people who are watching. Even though they may not say anything, I still remember this happened a couple of years ago. I had met this woman Oh, several years before. And then after a while we had gone separate ways and I hadn't heard from her or seen her or whatever. And it must have been about 4 or 5 years. Out of the blue, she calls me. And I thought she just called to chit-chat. And then near the end of the conversation, she wanted to know if I was still abstinent and still doing, what I do with the food. And I said, yeah, I am. And she was ready to be abstinent. And I thought about it to myself, and it was like, whoa, that is something, that you think that it looked as if she did not even care about what I did, but evidently she was checking it out, and even from a distance she knew to, come back. And I pray that that's true about my faith as well, especially with my children, that more than what I say with my mouth, I pray that my life testifies that I am a child of the King, that Jesus is truly my Savior and my Lord, and I'm not just mouthing those words. But anyway, I'm going to ask Joni, since she is our shepherd tonight, if she could say a few words about this passage. Joni?